ever had one of those neighborly disputes that goes way beyond just a little chat over the fence, you know, the kind that gets a little intense.
Oh, yeah.
Well, today's deep dive, this might make you want to not only double check your property lines, but maybe brush up on that easement law, too.
Good idea.
We are going all the way back to 1943.
Wow.
With Romanchuk v. Plotkin, a Minnesota case that just goes to show property law, sometimes it can be a real head-scratcher.
It really can.
So, what's fascinating to me about Romanchuk is how something, you know, seemingly as simple as sharing a sewer line can lead to this whole legal battle. And it's all underground, too, right?
Yeah. Ben. And that's one of the things that's so interesting about Romanchuk is that it is something that is hidden. You know, you can't see it, but it can still cause all these problems.
Okay. So let's set the stage a little bit.
Yeah.
Imagine, our listeners, you buy a property, everything seems great, you're settling in, and then bam, you find out you're sharing a sewer line with your neighbor.
Oh, no.
And it's not even mentioned in your deed.
That is a problem.
That's what happened to the Romanchuks.
Yeah. And to really get into how this whole thing unfolded, we need to rewind a bit. Go back to 1915.
Right.
When the defendants in the case, they bought a property. It had a duplex on it.
Okay.
And it had a sewer line, a shared sewer line.
Okay.
Fast forward a few years to 1921, they buy the lot right next door.
Oh, interesting.
And crucially, this lot, at that time, no plumbing, no sewer connections, nothing.
Okay, so we've got two properties, same owners, but only one is hooked up to the sewer system. What happens next?
Well, the very next year, in 1922, they decide, okay, let's connect this new lot to that existing sewer line. So now you've got three houses all sharing this one single line. It's all underground, all on the defendant's property. But, and this is where things get a little sticky, they had mortgaged that newly connected lot back in 1921.
Oh, yep.
Right before they actually hooked it up to the sewer system.
Oh, why does the timing of that mortgage even matter? It seems like such a small detail.
It's anything but small. This little timing thing, it's like a domino effect that leads to the whole heart of the case.
Really?
Because just a few years later, 1938, that mortgage, it goes into foreclosure.
Oh.
And that is where our plaintiffs, the Romanchuks, they come in.
They enter the picture.
They buy this foreclosed property, totally oblivious to this whole shared sewer situation that's going on underground.
So they think they're getting a fresh start, and then bam.
Bam! Exactly. They are now tangled up in this whole mess of pipes and property lines.
So what happened after they moved in?
Well, for a while, things seemed okay. They shared the maintenance of the sewer line. You'd think, okay, maybe there's some kind of agreement here. But then things go sour. Disputes start popping up. And to add fuel to the fire, the defendants, they build a fence that actually encroaches onto the Romanchuk's property.
Oh, come on.
It's like full-on neighbor wars.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
Okay, so we have got history. We have got underground infrastructure. We've got these simmering tensions. This sounds like a legal showdown in the making.
Oh, absolutely. And the big question at the center of it all is there an implied easement for that sewer line?
Right.
Even though it wasn't ever specifically written down in any of the property deeds.
You can't exactly see a sewer line when you're walking a property.
No, you can't.
So how did the court even start untangling this? Did they just throw up their hands and say, well, everyone needs a sewer line, so there's an easement?
They couldn't do that. The court had to really dig into some pretty complex legal stuff to figure out if an implied easement actually existed here.
Okay.
They looked at three main things. First, when exactly did the severance of title occur, given that whole mortgage and foreclosure situation? Second, can something underground, like a sewer line, can that ever be considered apparent when you're trying to prove there's an easement?
Interesting.
And third, what does reasonably necessary actually mean when you're talking about justifying an easement?
So it wasn't just common sense. There was some serious legal analysis going on. Let's break these down a little bit. First, severance of title. What is that, and why does it even matter in this case?
This is where that timing of the mortgage really comes back to bite. The court had to pinpoint that exact moment when the ownership of those two properties actually legally split.
Okay.
Was it back in 1921 when they first mortgaged the lot, or was it later, in 1938, when it was foreclosed?
Why does the exact timing matter? Wouldn't it be the same legal outcome either way?
Not necessarily. And this is where it gets kind of interesting. They decided, the court did, that because of Minnesota's lien theory, the severance actually happened at the foreclosure in 1938, not when the mortgage was signed.
Okay, I'm going to need you to break that down for me. What's Minnesota's lien theory and why does it make such a big difference here?
All right, so lien theory. Okay, so in Minnesota, when you take out a mortgage, it doesn't actually transfer ownership of the property.
Interesting.
It just creates what's called a lien.
Okay.
It's like a financial claim against that property. So the lender, they don't technically own the property until there's a foreclosure and they take possession.
So in this case, the defendants still owned both properties when they connected that second lot to the sewer line, even though they had mortgaged it.
Exactly. And that means, legally speaking, it was all one big happy property family when the sewer line was installed.
Okay, so that takes care of the severance of title issue. But now we've got this whole question of whether using that sewer line was continuous and apparent, even though it was buried underground. How does that even make sense?
It's a great question, and it gets to the heart of how the law deals with these essential but invisible things.
Yeah.
The court, they said, apparent doesn't have to mean, like, literally visible.
Okay.
Think about it like this. You can't actually see Wi-Fi signals, right?
True.
But you know they're there because your phone connects.
Like, the evidence is there.
Exactly. It's kind of the same with these underground utilities. There's evidence of their existence, even if they're hidden.
Okay, so the court is saying a reasonable person, like a plumber or a home inspector who knew what to look for, they would have been able to figure out that sewer line was there.
Exactly. The focus is on what a reasonably knowledgeable person would have been able to deduce. And in this case, there were enough clues that the answer was yes. You know, the way the houses were positioned, the fact that the defendants were already using that line for their other properties, it all kind of pointed to it being there.
It all adds up.
It does.
So they tackled severance of title. They established that using the sewer was continuous and apparent, even though it was underground. What was the third hurdle the court had to clear?
So the third part of the test, this is about whether the easement was reasonably necessary for the Romanchuks to actually enjoy their property.
Okay.
Now, the court was very careful here to distinguish between something being absolutely indispensable versus reasonably necessary.
So it wasn't like survival level necessity, like having water or electricity.
Right. The Romanchuks, could they have like theoretically connected to the public sewer system in a different way?
Maybe.
Sure. But it wouldn't have been practical or cheap. Imagine digging up your whole yard to lay new pipes, all to avoid using an existing, perfectly functional sewer line. It just doesn't make sense.
No.
Right.
It sounds like the court was trying to be both legally sound and practical.
Absolutely. And to support that, they pointed out how both parties had been sharing the cost of those sewer line repairs over the years.
Oh, that's smart.
It suggested this understanding that, hey, the sewer connection, it's necessary for both of us, even if they hadn't put it in writing.
Actions speak louder than words.
They do. But hold on, there's another layer to this. Remember that fence the defendants built?
The one that was encroaching.
That's the one. They actually tried to use that in their legal argument.
Wait, how could a fence possibly help them win a case about a sewer line?
They tried to claim adverse possession, basically arguing that because they had been using that part of the property where the fence was for a certain amount of time, they owned it.
So it's like a legal switcheroo.
Yeah, kind of.
Did it work?
Not a chance. The court saw right through it. They pointed out that the defendants only put that fence up after the Romanchuks bought the property. No way they could meet that 15-year requirement for adverse possession in Minnesota. It was kind of a desperate move that backfired.
So the court considered everything, all the angles. They sided with the Romanchuks, found there was that implied easement for the sewer line, even though, remember, it wasn't written down anywhere officially.
Right.
But this was back in 1943. Why are we even talking about Romanchuk v. Plotkin now? Is it just a fun legal story, or does it actually still matter today?
That's the thing. Romanchuk v. Plotkin, it isn't just some dusty old case. It's still cited in legal arguments all the time, almost a century later.
Wow.
And what's really cool is how those principles from Romanchuk, they're being used for things the original judges never even dreamed of.
Like what?
Think about it. Fiber optic cables, all those underground utility lines, even the easements you need for something like solar panels.
Oh, wow.
These were completely foreign concepts in 1943.
Yeah.
But the legal foundation laid out in Romanchuk, it's surprisingly adaptable.
It's like they gave us this framework for thinking about easements, and now we're using that framework in situations that are way more complex.
Exactly. That's what makes this case so fascinating. It's not just a static piece of history. It's this dynamic legal document that continues to shape how we think about property rights in this rapidly changing world.
It's like Romanchuk v. Plotkin is a gift that keeps on giving for legal folks.
I like that analogy, but let's take a step back from all the theory and get down to brass tacks. Let's say you're a lawyer and you're advising a client about to buy a property.
Okay.
What practical lessons can you take from Romanchuk?
So practical takeaways. What are the key things lawyers should be thinking about, thanks to Romanchuk, when they're working with clients on property issues?
Well, first and foremost, this case screams due diligence. It's a giant reminder that in real estate, what you see isn't always what you get. Always, always advise clients to really thoroughly inspect any property for signs of, you know, existing infrastructure, especially stuff that could be hidden underground.
So it's not enough to just glance at the deed. You have to really roll up your sleeves and get in there.
Yeah, literally and figuratively. Remember, a quick walk around the property, that might not be enough to spot a buried sewer line or a utility connection that could cause some serious legal headaches later on.
Right, so call on the reinforcements. Bring in the surveyor, the plumber, maybe even a really experienced real estate lawyer who knows all the tricks of the trade.
Exactly. It's always better to be safe than sorry. And speaking of sorry situations, Romanchuk also throws a spotlight on how important it is to have everything documented clearly and explicitly. If an easement exists, get it written down. Ideally in the deed itself.
So no more handshakes, no more gentlemen's agreements. Put it in black and white. Make it official.
Exactly. It might feel like overkill at the time, but trust me, clear documentation can save you from a whole world of hurt and legal battles down the line.
It's like that saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
100%. And lastly, Romanchuk underscores the importance of knowing the ins and outs of property law in your specific jurisdiction. Remember how we talked about how this case really hinged on Minnesota's lien theory and how they approach implied easements?
Right.
Well, those legal principles might be interpreted totally differently in another state.
So do your research, folks. What looks like an open and shut case in one state might be a legal nightmare in another.
It's so important to stay current on the latest case law and what's happening with the statutes in your area of expertise. Cases like Romanchuk show us that even those well-established principles can be reinterpreted as new technology emerges, society changes, or sometimes even just because of a really clever legal argument.
It's a good reminder that the law is a living, breathing entity. It's not just about memorizing a bunch of rules. It's about understanding how those rules are applied and adapted in the real world, which can get pretty messy.
Absolutely. And with that, we come to the end of our deep dive into Romanchuk v. Plotkin. We covered a lot of ground, from the historical details to the legal nuts and bolts, and even some practical advice for both lawyers and everyday people dealing with property issues.
And I hope our listeners are walking away with a new appreciation for just how complicated property law can be. And maybe a tiny bit of worry about what might be lurking beneath their own properties.
Maybe just a little. But seriously, I hope this deep dive has ignited some curiosity, a desire to keep exploring that intersection of law, history, and how the world around us is constantly changing. Because as Romanchuk shows us, there's always something more to uncover, even in the most ordinary parts of our lives.
So the next time you're out for a walk, take a second to think about what's underfoot. You never know what legal battles might have played out right there, or what hidden easements are shaping the very ground you're standing on. And if you ever find yourself caught in a property dispute, remember the lessons we learned from Romanchuk v. Plotkin. Do your research, get all the facts, and most importantly, don't be afraid to dig deep.